Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you missed the highly rated and critically acclaimed early edition of WWL First News with Dave Cohen, he was talking early this morning about today being National what day? National Tag Day, and that got us talking about different, not price tag, about different games that you played as a kid, and we called it Feint, where we would have a base on either side of the parking lot, and you ran across, and I think if they somebody you know what happened? If you got touched, I just realized this, you were in the middle of the field. So then you had to chase people as well. So it would be even harder for you to get across, and you would wait till people weren't looking and that kind of thing. So if you played tag, text me at 504-260-1870. And let me know. And the other question I want to ask you real quick, Dave, is did you ever do anything on a playground that you got away with then that would not be allowed now? And I'll give you two examples. Well, like walking up a slide, shoot to shoot, whatever you call it thing. You know what I mean? Like, a slide. Yeah, walking it up it instead of sliding down it. Or on a seesaw, is that what you called it in Chicago? Jumping off and letting the other person go slam into the ground. You've never done that? Tim, have you ever done that or not? Never? He's lying. Yeah, when you're at the bottom, you jump off and then they go hurtling toward the ground. Yeah, what's that, Joe? Yeah, there you go. See, people have done that. All right, quick about Joe. Let's see about Dr. Susan Hassick, Associate Professor, Tulane School of Public Health, Tropical Medicine. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm well.
Have you ever been on a seesaw and been at the bottom and then jumped off when you were a kid and let the other person go crash toward the ground?
I have played on a teeter-totter, but I never did that to anybody, Tommy.
Oh, well, neither.
That was what boys did.
Neither did
girls
I.
Girls didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, I did. Believe me, I did. And boys did it to each other and sometimes a girl. Anyway, let's talk about what you're here for. First of all, how you been? We haven't spoken to you in a while.
I'm doing well. Been kind of catching up on everything that I ignored during the pandemic, as far as my house and all that sort of thing. But doing well. How about yourself?
I'm well. Thank you, Doc. Let's talk about the latest. I don't know what's going on. I know I tried to get a COVID shot at the pharmacy, and I was told I needed a prescription now to get a COVID shot. I guess that's something new. And also, what are the guidelines when it comes to flu shots and COVID shots and prescriptions and vaccines and all that stuff?
Well, it's in a bit of a mess right now, frankly, as far as a public health perspective goes. Since the committee that provides recommendations for vaccine procedures and utilization was disbanded by the secretary and reconfigured with people who don't particularly favor vaccination, things have gotten quite confusing.
Can you kind of sort it out as best as you can for those of us that wonder about flu shots and COVID and all that stuff?
Flu shots haven't really changed.
Okay.
And so everyone should get their flu shot every year because the flu virus changes a lot in between seasons. And flu is still a potentially really problematic disease for the very young and particularly the very old or not so very old. And then COVID has gotten much more confusing and much more challenging, I think, and will be more problematic. But it is still important that everyone get their COVID boosters. As far as I can read, Insurance companies are still planning to cover it, but some states, including Louisiana, have put a additional barrier in there to getting it. You can't just walk into the pharmacy and request one. You need to get one from a physician. The problem there is many people don't have a physician that they see regularly, so they don't have a way to access that prescription process. And in addition, it's just another added step that is going to be a barrier to people who need to get it to have access to that shot. So that is, from my perspective, of making people having is the easiest possible access to things that will keep them healthy, a real problem.
So for those of us who went down the COVID road, you talked about stuff you're still catching up on, and it changed all of our lives. It was a sea change in the world, right?
It's still here.
Well, and that's my question. How concerned are you now that there's another hurdle toward, well, I guess you can call it a hurdle toward getting the vaccine, because now I'm going to have to, and I firmly believe in a COVID vaccine. I'm, you know, over 50 years of age, and I want to protect my health. I get a flu shot every year. Can't remember the last time I had a cold. I know you're going to say that has nothing to do with anything, but I'm just saying I don't. And I am prone to some respiratory issues. That's why I always get it. But for people that, for whatever reason, maybe would have gotten it, but now it's like, well, I'm not going to go make an appointment and see a doctor or this or that, the other thing, and pay this and that to get the vaccine. How concerned are you of a resurgence of COVID with people not getting vaccinated?
I am concerned because even though we have been living with this particular virus for a number of years, it too continues to change, perhaps even more rapidly than the flu virus does. And what protection might exist from prior vaccination or prior infection may not remain as beneficial to us individually and collectively for a long time.
Because what we're talking about here, what the legislature did, correct me if I'm wrong, and I know you're a doctor, not a lawyer, or maybe you're both, I don't know.
No, I'm a doctor.
Okay. But rather, they didn't force anybody. It's not like they were saying there was a COVID mandate, but instead they made it harder for people to get the COVID vaccine. That's the bottom line on this, is it not?
Yes, it is. And that by dropping the universal recommendation, which is one of the decisions by the vaccine committee that just came out, it's made people, it's going to drop off of people's radar even more quickly, is what I'm afraid of. People hear, still hear, you know, every year you need to get a flu vaccine. Once they stop reminding people to get a COVID vaccine, we know that uptake is going to drop, and people that really need it for protection to keep them from being hospitalized or perhaps in the worst case scenario, dying from COVID, are going to find it more and more less and less impinging on their awareness of the kinds of things they need to do. And if they don't have a regular doctor where they go to see them for an annual checkup and get reminded, you know, about have you gotten this shot, have you gotten that shot, whatever, the more difficult we make it for people to access things that will help keep them well, the more problematic it is for those people to, you know, do what would be best for them.
I think the insidious part of this is you could, I don't know that you can just set up a tent somewhere and start writing prescriptions to people for COVID vaccines. I don't know if you can do that ethically. I don't know if you could do that legally. I also don't know from a liability standpoint if you would want to do that, right?
Well, I think that one solution is, and it's what I'm going to try and do, is send an email message to my primary care provider and get her to write a prescription, send it into my usual pharmacy so I can go get my COVID shot. That's my plan. I'm hoping I won't have to make an appointment to get a prescription. That's the kind of barrier that, frankly, people who want to make it difficult to get vaccines choose to impose on populations.
That's what I meant by the insidious nature of it, because it's one thing to force somebody to get a vaccine, but it's something else to make it more difficult for people that want to get it to just get the vaccine and do what they think is right. Tell me what's going on with measles too, doctor, the vaccine?
Well, I don't know if you have children, Tommy.
29 years old, so.
Okay, so long time ago. Yeah. But children have a schedule of vaccinations that are recommended to protect them against all sorts of infectious diseases that in the past have killed or made very sick populations all around the world. These diseases aren't gone. They are still out there and circulating, but because we have had historically high vaccination levels for diseases like measles and whooping cough, we have seen them very infrequently. We are now seeing more and more cases of measles, outbreaks of whooping cough and measles occurring much more frequently, and that's very problematic. But one of the things that has always been a challenge for childhood vaccination is that there are a lot of diseases and a lot of vaccines. And so if they are individual vaccines, then the child has to experience many shots. And no kid likes to get a needle stuck in their arm or in their leg. And so the design of these multiple target vaccines, like the MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella, now MMRV with varicella chickenpox added in, is to make it just fewer needle sticks for kids to get the protection that they need to, you know, have a healthy and happy childhood. The varicella is important because if you get infected with chickenpox, even though it is not in a child necessarily a serious disease, it's unpleasant and uncomfortable, but it can be very problematic for adults who get it. And it is what ultimately can cause shingles in older adults as they age, if you've had chickenpox in your past. So vaccinating against varicella is an important long-range, multi-generational kind of intervention. And removing it from the MMR just makes it one more injection that kids have to get.
Well, and again, talk about insidious nature of that, doctor. As a parent, and again, it was a long time ago, but one of the hardest things in the world to do as a parent is to have the child look at you as a baby thinking, you know, that you're the protector and everything else, and you know the doctor's going to stick him with a needle and it's going to hurt,
yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it. It's just you got to have a little bit of pain to get the protection. And I just think, again, there's an insidious nature of that parents are going to be hesitant to have their child stuck twice, so the vaccine's going to fall by the wayside. Thank you, Doc. I appreciate your time. Dr. Susan Hassig, associate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Professor, Tulane School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, about gentle parenting. We'll explain what it is when we return on WWL. All right, let me clean this up before we go to Dr. Judy Ho. 9:28 now on this Wednesday morning, October 8th. I was talking about the COVID vaccine. Dr. Brobson Lutz happened to be listening, and we all know who he is. But he said he read in the Wall Street Journal that as of today, CVS and Walgreens in every state is offering the COVID vaccine without a prescription. He said he called the CVS on Britannia Street, told there was no prescription needed. Make your own decision. Do what you want. I just didn't want to put any misinformation out there about needing a prescription to get a COVID vaccine at either Walgreens or CVS. And Dr. Lutz texted in to straighten us out on that. With that, we go to Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, who joins us from California. Thanks for getting up a little bit early, Doc. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay. Do you work out every day? You get up every day, do an early morning exercise routine or not?
Well, sometimes in the morning and then other times at the end of the night. But yes, I pretty much work out every single day.
And the reason I asked is talk about, because there was a study about 2-minute exercise snacks or something. I don't know about the efficacy of that. But just talk about the importance of, and I was thinking about this last night on a treadmill in advance of talking to you today, the importance of exercise as it relates to mental health.
Yeah, it's huge because, first of all, it is an event that helps you to not only build self-esteem, but clearly is going to be amazing for your physical health, which, of course, has a relationship to your mental health. So not only does it actually increase positive neurotransmitters in your brain, like dopamine and serotonin, it also helps with all other kinds of things. For example, oftentimes people will report a better mood after they work out. Maybe not right before you start, maybe not even in the beginning of your workout, but generally people say that their mood is elevated after they do a workout, no matter how short it is. There's also a feeling of accomplishment. You check something off that you know is good for you. It provides oxygenation to your brain and your muscles. All of that can also help with the nervous system regulation response, especially when you're under stress. So there's a ton of great benefits, even if you only have a few minutes. I mean, not everybody can do an hour routine every day, right? And that's why I don't know that the efficacy of a 2-minute workout, but 10 minutes, 15 minutes, a walk around the block, a quick strength training routine, all of that's very beneficial.
If you feel a need to jump, drop down and do like 50 push-ups, go ahead, Doc. I'll fill time for you, okay?
I'll do that during the commercial break.
Put Luca on your back. Do that. Put your son on your back. Then put it a little resistance. Let's talk about parenting because you are a parent of a 4-year-old now?
Yeah, he's almost 4.
Goes by fast.
Crazy.
It does. Crazy. So we were talking about helicopter parents at one point, and now we're going to talk about gentle parenting. What is the term gentle parenting mean? And when it comes to being an effective parent, professionally, what would you advise people that either are watching their kids with their grandkids or maybe they have children of their own listening right now? And as we always say, they don't come with a manual, right?
Exactly. And everybody's parenting approach is going to differ. You always think that you know better than everybody else, but, you know, maybe for your own child, but not for someone else's child. And remember, they're coming with their own experiences from their childhood, things that they want to repeat and not repeat, as well as their own viewpoints and choices about how to parent their child and raise a human being.
So tell me about gentle parenting. What does that look like?
Gentle parenting is interesting. I mean, so there are some really good elements of gentle parenting, some components of it that align with research, and that would be the authoritative parenting. Essentially, that means that you are loving and connected with your child, but you're also firm with them and you set limits. However, I think gentle parenting takes that a step further. So those elements are still there, those themes are still there, but gentle parenting also says, well, let's focus on the child's emotions first. Let's focus on the connection first. If you were to choose between connection and firmness and boundaries, choose the connection, choose the love. And I think this is where people get some things wrong, because just because you're being firm doesn't mean that that's not love. But I think that sometimes when you look at gentle parenting, at least the examples that are out there on social media, it's like, let's try to raise a child who you just say, I love you all the time. And the rules are kind of softly given and the consequences are not as structured as you might want for them to learn important life skills. I understand why some people would be an advocate of this approach, especially if you grew up where your parents were super firm or you felt like you were a bit traumatized by your parents' more authoritarian parenting, kind of like a dictatorship. But at the same time, you're not actually giving your child the recipe for success if you lean into this format of the gentle parenting too much.
You know, as you say that, has there ever been a child in the history of mankind that is, or womankind, that has never been traumatized by their parent in one way or the other? And I say that because everybody, you know, grows up differently and you try to be the best parent that you can. None of us are perfect. We're all human beings. I'm sure at some point I traumatized my child. I'm sure at some point my parents traumatized me, not intentionally, but is it an unrealistic expectation to think that you're never going to traumatize your child? I'm not saying you should, to be clear. I'm just saying that, go ahead, you know what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no matter how, quote unquote, great of a parent you're being, you're going to make some mistakes along the way, even if you don't perceive them to be mistakes, right? I hear this all the time, not only just among my friends, but of course, patients that I'm treating, and even just recollection myself, where I'll remember something really specifically from my childhood. I'll bring it up with my mom, and she'll be like, I don't remember that at all. So, mm-hmm. Things sort of imprint on people differently, right? And even if the parent is trying their best, you can't knock everything out of the park every single time. So you're right. There has to be a realistic expectation that you're going to make mistakes. And even when you don't think you're making a mistake, your child might have felt like you made a mistake. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that they're going to be traumatized forever. That doesn't mean that they're going to hate you forever, right? I mean, I really see parenting kind of like the 80-20 rule. Like 80% of the time, if you're doing things kind of right, you're good. 20% of the time, you're making some mistakes, you're trial and error. That's expected. There shouldn't be this crazy bar that nobody can uphold.
So you're a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. You see patients. I know you can't disclose any patient's confidence, and I'm not asking you to do that. But at some point in the course of therapy, do people ever say that their parents were perfect? Because I'm guessing not. I'm guessing everybody eventually has stuff back in their childhood that goes back, and for whatever reason, as you said, maybe they don't remember it, but some things do stick in their memory.
Exactly. And I think that that's really important to remember. And also it's important to remember that for why somebody, when they become a parent, might choose to parent in a specific way. And this whole gentle parenting comes from, you know, maybe certain personality traits or worldviews. But I think more specifically, it comes from people thinking back on their own childhood and saying, well, what did I like about it? And what did I not like about it? But I think the problem is gentle parenting can cross very easily into what we used to call permissive parenting. Mm-hmm. There's different terms for it, but permissive parenting basically just means that you're kind of letting the kid do whatever they want. So it can be kind of a slippery slope when you're doing gentle parenting, because then you're afraid to reinforce any limits. And then, of course, every child is going to protest. Every child, no matter how great they are going to, you know, test the waters. And they also know how to manipulate. You know, there's nothing wrong with children trying to lie and deceive and manipulate, because that is also a life skill. And the idea is that as a parent, you're supposed to push back, call them out on it, and set limits. When you don't, it can actually teach a completely different life lesson than when you were hoping. But I hear a lot of gentle parents saying, oh, but then I try to give him a timeout and he cried. I was like, yeah, I think most kids would cry if you gave him a timeout. And they're going to be a little bit momentarily upset, but that's not going to damage them forever. In fact, it's better for them to know, oh, there's some zero tolerance behaviors. You have to get a timeout if you're not following instructions after I give it to you three times. Or maybe if you throw something or hit your sister. I mean, they have to know that there are rules about that. Even if they don't understand the complexities of morality, it's time to at least teach them that there are rules of life you have to follow.
So many questions. I remember one time, I might have told you this story, negotiating a timeout. And the end of the timeout, I felt as though I was trying to negotiate the end of the Hamas thing, because the kid was refusing to give in, the mom was refusing to give in, and I was trying to get everybody just back to normal after 20 minutes of screaming and timeout. And I think I wound up I think that kid would still be in a corner were it not for my intervention. We'll take a break, pick it up with Dr. Judy when we come back. Phone lines are open, the text line, 504-260-1870. Somebody texted in and said, I have a child whose son, I guess they're talking about their grandson here, that the grown child is raising the child as their friend and not as their parent and not as their child. So we'll address that when we come back. Dr. Judy Ho is our guest, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, 504-260-1870. That's the Oquinar Jeweler talk and text line. No texting and driving, but share your views on parenting. If you were a parent, how did you go about handling it with your kid? Or how do you remember your parents handling it with you? Were they too strict, too permissive, just right? Do you think you were too strict, too permissive as a parent, just right? I'd love to hear from you. 938, 22 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:45, quarter till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, Gentle Parenting. Our jumping off point, a text comes in, what to do, Dr. Judy, if my 7-year-old ignores me when I ask him a question? I have my answer, but let me hear yours.
Oh, I get ignored by my 4-year-old toddler all the time. And I have to say it 2 or 3 times. So it's very interesting because sometimes we get all annoyed and it's because we actually haven't gotten their attention before asking the question. So in our minds, it feels kind of like we've been asking 3 or 4 times. But hey, if they're immersed in something else, a video game, a toy, YouTube, that might be frustrating just to see them be so immersed. But at the same time, they're obviously not attending to you. Remember, they're developing brains. They don't have executive function the way we do. And even as adults, I can barely multitask. And so you got to kind of get on their level, make sure they're making eye contact with you, make sure that they're actually attending to you before you count that as the first time you're asking the question. I would say that that's the first way to deal with that. And then I think the other piece is, you know, there has to be some kind of disciplinary follow through. So everybody does this differently. There's kind of like the 1-2-3 parenting method, or there's I'm going to say this 3 times. And by the 3rd time, you're going on a timeout. Everybody's different in terms of how they follow up, but make sure whatever method you choose, that it's consistent. So once you know you've actually engaged them and they're paying attention to you, you ask the question. And if they still don't respond, then tell them the next time that you do this and every time that you do this, this is a consequence that follows, and make sure that it fits their age range, right? Sometimes people will say, well, I'm going to take away your iPad for a week. Kids who are 7 or 8 or 9 or even 10 don't understand that, but they can understand for the rest of the day or until tomorrow. You know, you can't give them something where they can't really appreciate that time length quite yet. And they really don't understand that until maybe in their teenage years, like when you're trying to ground somebody for a week. It really needs to be more appropriate for their age level and their understanding.
Now, here you can psychoanalyze me from my response, which would be, here's the way my mind works. I would say, first of all, well, let's make sure that the communication happened. Did you hear me? If they didn't hear me, then I make sure that they did. And then I would explain. If it became a habit, I would say, well, look, you can't ignore me when I talk to you. It's rude. That's not how we treat people. That would just be my approach. Somebody texted in and said, this is a problem here with parents, with moms and dads being on different pages, saying that my wife likes to take everything away from our kids. No video games, no game, no going to friend's house or having friends over, etc. I always have to talk to her in order to get their punishment less. And I talked about negotiating only one time, the timeout, because I think the kid would still be in that corner had I not negotiated that end of the discussion some 26 years ago. But what would you say here with parents being on the same page in terms of parenting? I don't think you ever want to undermine the other in front of the child, right? Like a manager almost?
Yeah, it's really hard because, of course, parents, we get upset too. We get annoyed and we kind of want to have our last say, and we might not agree with parenting, which happens more often than you might think. And then we say this in front of the child. And you know what? Like, not only is that kind of disturbing to the child, feels chaotic, it also gives them an in to disturb the status quo even more. Children know where the weak spots are. So they're like, oh, well, mom always says yes to this, dad doesn't. So I'm just going to go and ask mom. So you definitely don't want to split in front of the child. You got to just kind of get in another room, find another time and talk about how you'd like to do this instead. And just so you know, like, parenting conflicts and parenting decisions that don't align, it's one of the most common reasons why couples argue. So you're not alone if this happens. You just have to find some middle ground and just be prepared to, sure, talk about your point of view, but also be prepared to compromise, because there are 2 people here and there are 2 parents. If that is your household and you have 2 parents and you can't always get your perfect form of parenting, there is another parent and their opinions are valued as well.
So somebody texted in about their grown child raising the grandchild as a friend, and the child is 7 years old, the kid in this equation, 7 years old, and wants to be the kid's friend more than the kid's parent. Now, you want to have the kid be able to come talk to you, right? And you want to let them know that they're there, but yet you can't be your kid's best friend, can you, when they're 7 or 8 or 9?
No, I mean, I think that might feel more appropriate when you're both adults and people see that they have that relationship with their child. I think that, you know, you're always going to be in your roles, but I understand that when you get older. But no, when the child is still living under your roof, there has to be a clear I'm the parent and you're the child, right? And I don't know if I told you this, but one time, Tommy, I went to this restaurant and we're sitting next to this very lovely mom and son. But the entire time, the mom's like, we're on a date. This is my son. He's my best friend. And she was saying things that kind of seemed like it was joking, but also was a little awkward. He was probably like 14. He was like a freshman in high school. And he looked, I mean, I think he loved his mom, obviously, but he also looked slightly embarrassed. And I'm just like, that's where you start to cross the line a little bit. I mean, if you joke about it once, fine, but she was like saying it 5 or 6 times. And, you know, it's like, I get it. You're like, you want to be that parent. You want to be the one, the cool parent. But you can be the cool parent and still be a parent, right? I mean, right. That's the operative word. So you got to find some way to stay connected with your children without making them your date night or your best friend.
Did you leave a card on the table as you left and said, call me or not?
I had, it was so funny because we were on a double date with another psychologist and his spouse. And I was like, well, there's two of us here. Who wants to take this on?
There you go. So you might want to, I would imagine a lot of eyebrows being raised over cocktails or whatever. So as a final thought, leaving the lines of communications open with your child after a disciplinary event happens, what would you suggest, Dr. Judy?
Well, I think that it's important to let them know that you're not happy with the behavior, but that you're happy with them, right? You have to separate your love and your connection with them from their behavior. So instead of them being a bad kid, it's like, well, that wasn't the best behavior. It's just important to establish some kind of ritual of connection after discipline, though. And I think that that is a way to kind of bridge that gentle parenting approach with, well, we're going to be firm, but we're going to be loving. And just because you do something that we don't like doesn't mean that our love has diminished with you.
Thank you, Doc. Appreciate your time. Insight as always. My best to Luca.
Thanks, Tommy. Thank you so much.
You bet.
I'll see you soon.
See you soon. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist. See you soon. I've never seen her. Host of the Supercharged Life podcast, 953. We'll take a break, find out what Newell's got planned for us today here on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.